Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Last year, you were doing what looked like an amazing play called You Will Get Sick. And you, a couple of times, posted some really delicious thirst traps to promote the show. But not as many thirst traps this year. Daniel, what changed? Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? This week, we've got Daniel K. Isaac, the gorgeous star of Every Brilliant Thing, here in LA at the Geffen Playhouse. And this conversation is pretty five-star, if I may say. Thank you so much for my birthday messages from last week. It felt so nice to hear people listen to the solo ep where I discussed accidentally trespassing at a hotel pool. The birthday was great. It feels gorgeous to be 34, and I celebrated getting too high and feeling the effects of that in this 34-year-old body. Speaking of getting too high, I put up a bonus episode on the Patreon, which is something I'm going to make a habit of. At least twice a month, I'm going to be putting up bonus episodes of things I don't want the full public to hear. And this episode is about the time I went to the spa on my birthday and experienced the feelings of being far too zooted for my own gooted. Here's a little preview. Well, this daddy was sitting there cooling down and saw me shower. And I took my, I had just taken my glasses off because, you know, I didn't want to get them all steamy. So I'm pretty sure he was staring at me and kind of flirty-izing me, but I couldn't really tell. So I might have been a little rude and kind of just like ignored him, but it still was hot and it made me feel very excited. And again, this the type of level of zootedness felt so delicious. I was in heaven. And unfortunately, it kind of didn't go downhill from there, but things started to turn. The rest of the episode you can find at patreon.com/gayasspodcast, and it's only $5 a month. And the more people that sign up, the more bonus episodes I will be able to do. And it's a risk I've been wanting to take, and I'm really proud of myself for putting these things out there and hopefully having people like yourselves sign up. The first day I posted it, I've already had, you know, doubled the audience that we had before. So I'm excited to see where it goes, and I really, really appreciate all of that support. So let's get into this week's episode with Daniel K. Isaac. We discuss the time he jacked off with a church friend, the character actress that he worked with that he chooses to save, and at the end of the episode, Daniel has some beautiful honesty and vulnerability about what happened after he came out and getting disowned. It's a chock-full episode. I'm so proud of it and thrilled you're here. And if you enjoy, let us know on social media. It's at KS Podcast, and I'm at Eric Wills. I love you. Daniel K. Isaac is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, fresh off of a five-show weekend. Daniel, how dare you have the energy to come onto this godforsaken podcast? Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. You let me sleep in today, so.
I mean, it's, for the Judy's listening, it's 11:39 a.m. You do a five-show weekend. Mm-hmm. What time do you wake up on Monday usually? Mm-hmm. How's your body wanting to sleep in?
I think I woke up around 9 something, but then just laid in bed and looked at my phone and panicked about a flu shot that I had forgotten I'd scheduled, so rushed over to Target to do that.
So you've had a day.
I've had a little morning, and then made it back and shoved a protein bar in my mouth, and here we are.
In your mouth. That was going to be my next question as to where it was shoved. How was the nurse giving the flu shot?
She was very kind and then went and stabbed me like it was a dart in a dartboard, you know?
Bitch. did you involuntarily shout out, bitch?
Can you imagine?
She's like, oh, these fucking gay guys getting shots, bitch. Mm-hmm. Well, you're smart to have gotten it, and I have not yet gotten mine myself, so thank you for the inspiration.
Do it. I did my COVID booster last week, too, so I spread them out one a week.
Good for you.
Just to not overwhelm my system.
Well, we were talking before we hit record about how crazy it is that you have you do two shows on Saturday, two shows on Sunday. You have a Friday night show, and mm-hmm. obviously the girls know based on my intro, but the play is called Every Brilliant Thing. It's at the Geffen. Yes. It is a solo show. You are literally, there's audience participation. There are just Daniel living your dream on the stage. So the question is, have you always been such a theater girlina? Were you the girls always want to know the high school shows you did?
Oh, okay. My first high school musical was Guys and Dolls.
Yeah.
I was a junior in high school, and I was one of the three guys who sing in the beginning about the gambling song
on
the horses. And then I forget what else we did. Man Who Came to Dinner, Noises Off, Midsummer Night's Dream.
You're that type of high school that did Shakespeare?
Yeah. Mr. Joe Hufford at Troy High School in Fullerton.
Shout out.
I will forever be indebted to him. And the last play I did was Look Homeward, Angel, which I really, really loved. This play set in the South, and he just did sort of inclusive casting, which I felt was so ahead of its time.
Yes. Who did you play?
It's like a mother and two sons, and
you played the mother.
I played the mother, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Typecasting.
It's really, no, it's very, it's, you know, representation matters. And I mm-hmm. think you as a Southern mother, come on, kids, supper's ready.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm just waiting to do a Glass Menagerie gender bent, right?
Yeah, no, you're going to play Laura?
Or is it Amanda?
Amanda's the mom.
Amanda's the mom, yeah.
So, oh, yeah, duh, you went to the next mother. I was thinking, okay, well, the next connection in my brain is that, so Celia Keenan-Bolger played the daughter, and I saw her do that in New York.
She was excellent. I loved that production.
So good. But I'm picturing you doing not that character. You are playing Celia Keenan-Bolger doing that character. That's what I want to see
you're
casting as. And then that goes to my next point in my brain that I've done some research on you. And in one of your interviews, you said that if you were to do a Broadway show, you'd want to do mm-hmm. Putnam County Spelling Bee for a revival. And I saw Celia Keenan-Bolger's brother Andrew do the tour when I was a teenager of Putnam County Spelling Bee. Look at this full gay cirque.
Wait, I wonder if I saw him on tour too, because I saw that in San Diego right before I moved to New York City.
Did you also hook up with him after?
I did not, but
I didn't either.
Did you?
That was a full
wishful thinking.
I mean, God,
anyone on Instagram sees his ridiculous body.
Yeah, I was gonna
and
say,
he's
like
in that Dracula show right now off Broadway. I can't wait to go see it when I get back. So,
oh, and also, he's obviously gorgeous, and his husband is very hot too. I feel like that's mm-hmm. important to say. Actually, speaking of gorgeous men, we'll get into you and your gorgeous boyfriend, but I feel like your boyfriend and Andrew's boyfriend could play siblings. that's a big compliment.
It is.
Do you really you say in this interview that you are more of a bass, and mm-hmm. we need more bass representation on Broadway, which I agree with. It's one of the reasons why I don't really do musical theater much. I'm like, I can't, these Book of Mormon,
you're a bass
boys,
too.
I'm like a baritone, like God made
me. A baritenor.
I'm a baritenor who just like, mm-hmm. you know, squeezes.
I've seen you sing online.
So what's the bass role we're going to manifest for Daniel on Broadway?
I love this. Let's do Bridges of Madison County, multiple steps down.
We're going to take her down three whole steps. Uh-huh. You're going to go, it all fades away, it all fades away, it all... Wait,
do you remember that video meme of like an egg or someone doing it with like a puppet?
Or it's like a pickle.
That brought me so
something.
Much joy. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. No, and I have to give a shout out.
Stupid.
It's so stupid. And speaking of beautiful stupidity, Matt, he is not much for a comedy sketch online, but he did make fun of Bridges of Madison County by saying that he was auditioning for the ensemble, and he put a video up of him just moving a bunch of chairs around. on the vowel ooh. The vowel ooh. Yeah, so I am excited to see you in a bass version of Brutus in Madison County.
Thank you. I am too.
Gorgeous manifestations on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Well, I do want to get us to the first and most important gay ass podcast question, which is, Daniel, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Oh, wow. According to my mother, it'd be her. She blames herself, which is, you know, maybe too deep to get into on this podcast, but that's what therapy is for.
No, this podcast and therapy is for our traumas with our mothers, and who among us doesn't have them?
But also, I think a guy at church taught me how to jerk off. So that's fitting for all these homophobic Christians out there.
I'll say that it fits in the palm of his hand. How, can you paint the picture? Was it a Sunday service?
I can't remember. I spent a lot of time at church, single mom, only child. So church was basically free babysitting. And I know it was nighttime. And funnily enough, back to your theater question, my mom introduced me to theater at this mega church's theater troupe that did original productions for Easter and Christmas.
Wow.
And so maybe rehearsal was over, or maybe everyone went to some sort of service, and it was just me and this other actress, her son. I think she was also a single mom, and maybe he was an only child too, but us two boys napping on the couch, like a rehearsal couch. And then he whipped out his boner, and I don't think I had quite reached puberty yet. So I don't think I could get a real, like, full-fledged boner.
Right.
Or I know I'd never jerked off before. And I guess pre-internet, you know, no one was there to teach me, or I didn't have siblings or anything. So he jerked off, and that was hot. And then I tried it at home. And this is so much for a podcast, but this is your podcast. So we'll just say,
don't stop.
I just remember like the tiniest dribble of semen, just like it was, you know, a baby. Please don't cancel us for pedophilia right now. But
hey,
you know,
don't say
biology.
Us. You're the one talking. Do not rope me in.
I haven't gone down this memory lane before. But shortly thereafter, dial-up internet happened. So,
and the rest is history. Do you remember what age you were for this couch and then dribble of cum moment?
Dribble of cum couch 10, 9.
Oh, yeah.
Like really young.
But the thing is I hear a lot of people that do have these sexual awakenings at these young ages. And funny enough, you know how you hear a lot of women are a lot more advanced when it comes to like puberty and growing up? Like, I remember hearing a lot of women would like hump their bears and shit at 8 and 9 to like, you know, masturbate. But I do think for boys, because just maybe physiologically it does, it's just an interesting like age to be like, I know that eventually I am going to be quite sexual. For you to be literally confronted with your theater friend's hard cock on a theater couch. And I think we can all smell that couch. I know what the couch looks like. I can smell the couch. Did anything ever happen again with this jack-off theater friend?
That guy, I feel like we did some heavy petting or like groping in the dark. I think I remember playing hide and seek with the kids once, and we hid behind one of those giant TVs back in the day.
Oh my God. Nothing
came of it. And I actually don't even remember his name or if he's gay today or not, which I then would have a bunch of gay experiences in Boy Scouts. So, you know, there's a double whammy of non-gay quote unquote spaces.
It's kind of hilarious to me that like you, I've read about, you know, like your relationship with your mom, her being religious, and the fact that you were put into like not only mega church, but mega church theater and then Boy Scout. It's like, honey, if she...
And water polo and swimming. It's just, you just thrust men at me.
At this point, it's not nature versus nurture. At this point, it's you did choose. Someone chose for you.
It's breeding. Yep.
Yeah, that to me is the democratic goal, is to make everyone gay, and they're just going to keep putting boys into water polo. Mm-hmm. Wait, that's so hot though. Like, my jealousy goes to, like, everything happened for a reason for me, of course, but I didn't have any sexual awakening IRL with an actual person until I was just about 19 years old. So, like,
whoa, was it phone sex? Was it AOL chat rooms?
Okay, well, that to me is not IRL. I did do phone chat. So then I did. God, did you do the phone chat stuff?
Yeah, maybe I'm a bass today because I would call people and then deepen my voice and try it. But I sucked at it, and it didn't really get me off as much, or I don't know that it still does. I think IRL is the way to go. And
I would love to pull a crowd to see who actually still does phone sex anymore. I assume long distance relationships.
Yes.
Otherwise, yeah, what are we doing here? Do you remember what website you met people on for your phone chats?
It was AOL chat rooms. Oh. That's when I first, I think I had the dumbest handle too, like Lifeguard Tiger 777 or something stupid that.
Lifeguard
like
Tiger.
Swimmer or whatever. Yeah. I must have had a thing for lifeguards. In church, my nickname was Tiger, like Tiger Woods, because I was super tan because I was in water polo and swimming. And, you know, Tiger Woods is part Asian, and the community used to be very proud of him, and maybe not so much anymore. And
yeah, that brings up a different connotation now. But
And I was in Troop 777 in Diamond Bar, California. So I just combined all of those things with this very unoriginal AOL screen name and tried my luck, but still sucked at it.
Screen names are very fraught with tension, because last week's episode I talked about how AIM was a big gay gateway for me, and what I did not reference was my screen name,
which was
it's devastating. And again, keep in mind I was not out until 18 years old. I was Cartwerick for Cartwheel Eric, because I loved gymnastics so much.
This is great. Your listeners are very grateful right now.
No, they're sad. Everyone kind of just looked inward and felt like this isn't fun anymore. It's just deeply sad. And also I do blame my dad for that one. He yes-anded that idea. But listen, your AOL chat rooms got you the phone sex. You had this faceless, nameless boy from the church couches. And then did you, because I think what I love about your work so much, I said this when I met you at, did I first meet you at Charles's cocktail party through Henry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think I said this to you then, but like, I have watched you in so many things for so many years, and I just think you're such an amazing actor and creator. And I've really loved seeing your journey. And one of the things that I really enjoyed watching and I want to ask you about now is the short film you did, According to My Mother. And I was kind of reading up again on how you basically would post screenshots of things that your mother would send you, and that kind of inspired you and your collaborator to make this film and this series. And my first question is, what is it like now, looking back at the things that were said to you when you were coming out? Do you look back and feel any sort of tension or sadness or pain, or has your journey been like, this is how it was meant to be for me to embrace myself now?
Well, my mom is in Orange County, and so she's come to LA a couple times now to bring me Korean food. She's seen the play 3 times now.
Wow.
And she picked me up from the airport, which was a thing I sort of allowed her to do so that she could feel like a mom again. And I specifically told her, don't bring me anything. I don't want food. I don't want anything from your place. I'm going into corporate housing. It'll have everything I need. And she said, what about a rice cooker? And I said, you can only bring a rice cooker. I don't want anything else. And she then tells me she's waiting outside the gate, and then warns me, don't open the trunk, put your suitcase in the back seat. And I just knew that she had not listened to me, and she had packed the trunk with all this food that I still haven't gotten through. And I actually sent her back home with some of it because I hate wasting food. And I I lost my shit. So I totally regressed into teenage self and feeling like my boundaries weren't being honored, and that this wonderful kind gesture of she made home-cooked Korean food and wanted to stock my fridge and freezer sent me over the edge, which tells you all these years of therapy still hasn't gotten through to whatever that regression thing is, which I guess happens to people when they go home for Thanksgiving or the holidays.
It does,
right?
And I want to normalize that for you, because I think it means that everything is real, and everything felt like it felt because it was so real. And I think that the regression almost has to happen as a reminder of how far you've come. But I do get that it's frustrating to be like, Jesus, I'm a full on fucking adult. And yet,
yes.
I mean, the things I feel in my stomach when there's the boundary thing, or even something as, you know, nice as bringing the food, I think it's quite complicated what's wrapped up in all of that. Because clearly you were having a real feeling for a reason, and it's easy to, you know, beat yourself up over it. But like, it must be a complicated thing to, and I'm only saying this because I have very much went through the same thing, which is that a lot of what we were told by family or otherwise was don't be gay.
Yeah, it's still, so, I'm still told that. So.
Right. And so it's like, okay, so I'm getting this support. I'm getting these things that are so well-intentioned. And yet there is a significant amount of toughness with what has come along with it.
Yeah. I was carrying a Tom of Finland tote bag to go grocery shopping one day, and she goes, you know, when I Google your name, the first thing that comes up is that you're gay, just gay, gay, gay all over the internet. And there are pictures of me. Can you take that off? Like, yes, mom, I can go on the internet and scrub it of your pictures that reference my sexuality.
I will talk to Mark Zuckerberg. Wait, who does Google?
Zuckerberg's Facebook, or Meta, excuse me, all the name changes. Who is Google?
We'll talk to Mr. or Mrs. or
Google,
or just
Mix Google.
Mix Google. We will talk to Mix Google and make sure your mother's images are scrubbed. Another mother I want to ask you about is, you worked with Jodie Foster, who is Mother.
Yeah.
And
an incredible director.
Well, that's the thing, is I saw that she directed you in a film.
Money Monster. Yeah.
And my question is, are lesbian directors better?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If the joke is that you need to fix up your house and who are you going to call, or when you're planning a vacation, I feel like I saw a TikTok about saying, we need the lesbians and we need to stop. Oh, it was Bob the drag queen saying, stop hating on lesbians. When you plan a vacation, gays would just spend the entire time trolling for dick, but lesbians would give you an itinerary and tell you they'll leave if you're not in the van by 7:05.
Oh my God.
And I laughed so hard. Bob the drag queen, I love. And
we love,
I guess,
Bob.
The Insta-targeted ads are working at me.
No, yeah, the Bob, whatever Bob is paying to the algorithm is...
It's great. I'm laughing every day on the toilet.
On the toilet, or in your sad post-show sleep, 9 a.m. Monday morning.
Now that boyfriend's gone, it is sad again, but...
Oh, yeah.
Back to long distance and maybe having to resuscitate phone sex.
Here I am, sassy.
We've come full circle.
Truly. So do you feel comfy saying how you met this gorgeous boyfriend?
Yes, we met on Scruff over 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And I was in an open relationship at the time. And he and I had incredible chemistry, but we'd never hooked up then. And I think part of it was he wasn't interested in someone in an open relationship then. And in my version of the narrative, I thought when I was single, he wasn't single anymore. But he has since confirmed that that is not true, that our timing must have just not been right then. And then he went on this 2-year backpacking trip around the world and then met someone, came to LA during the pandemic. And then made his way back to New York, and he saw a play of mine that I did last year, And I had a very eventful year in which I had a commitment ceremony and a separation with my ex all in one year. And so because it's hard to advertise on social, the separation, because I'm not, who did it not too long ago? Was it Reese Witherspoon or someone made an Instagram post saying we're divorcing? And I thought,
oh, yeah, well, I mean, who didn't? Yeah, there was a fair amount of those. But that was not your journey.
That was not my journey online. And so my favorite thing to do after a show is to go out for drinks. And a bunch of mutual friends and Scott were there. And they were asking, oh, how was your wedding? How was how's the husband? And I had to say, well, it was a commitment ceremony, not a wedding. And we are separated. And Scott did this thing that now I've exaggerated in my head, but it was one of those, oh, I'm so sorry you're single now. And he likes to tease me that I have very small windows of being single in my history of knowing him. And so
he snatched you right up.
He really did. And I'm very happy.
Did you kiss that night?
We did. We did. God. I walked him to a taxi and we kissed. And
Wow. I mean, by the way, Daniel, when I asked you how you two met, I knew it was going to be somewhat interesting, but this is tens across the board. It has intrigue. I mean,
the short answer could just be scruff 6 years ago. But
no, this is way better. I mean, because here's the deal. I think that there's a lot of discourse on the internet that to me does not feel like it serves us. That discourse being like, are open relationships good or bad? It's like that to me is we've moved far beyond that. And I think what's actually interesting are the conversations about how we now as queer people who have benefited so much from the people who have fought through the years where we were literally, you know, criminalized for being gay or for gay sex, and then to now, of course, being marriage being legal, and then for there being more of an open dialogue about modern relationships, because I've talked about it on this podcast too, about Matt and I have been together for so many years that we were monogamous the entire first eight years of our relationship. And now that we have sort of enjoyed the like separating ourselves from the idea of what straight society told us we needed to be in a quote unquote good relationship, all the way to you talking about how you met Scott on Scruff when you were in an open relationship, and then to talk about how you had a commitment ceremony and then you got separated. It's these things that aren't talked about often, I feel, about we as queer people are no different from straight people, but we do have very specific experiences that I don't think we're given the same benefit of the doubt. And I think for you having gone through a breakup that then you had to decide on a public level what to say about it. It's all just very interesting about sort of the roller coaster of life that I think straight people take for granted, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. It's like thinking about what media representation we had growing up. And I clung to what little there was out there. And I thought Will and Grace was the rubric. I thought Queer as Folk would be my clubbing and hooking up future. I thought, you know, that really sad storyline in Dawson's Creek would be my fate, or that this was all there was. And now to see so much more diversity of stories happening there, and you know, to have a podcast like this where you can explore or continue to share those different stories and experiences hopefully makes someone else feel less alone, and that it's okay, or that it's not an anomaly or weird, or that, you know, just that you're not alone in it.
100%. And I think that what I would like to do for myself even is normalize all of the difficult feelings that we have for the better. Example being what we talked about with our parents and saying, a lot of shitty things were said and we're going to feel those triggers, but also, you know, we can tether ourselves to how much we've grown. On the other side, Matt and I never want to project to the world that Matt and I as a relationship have always been great, will always be great, and everything is, oh my God, I love my hubby. I like really, I think I have, that triggers me because my parents, you know, like most people's parents, had many ups and downs. And I think that when I see people project just constantly how perfect the marriage, mm-hmm. the relationship is, it's like that is doing literally no one favors. And so I think to talk to you, it's like when you, you know, let's say the talk about that night where you are out with Scott after your show, when you, you know, would deliver the news to people that you were separated from your ex, did it bring up any feelings of, I don't even project, did it bring up any feelings to you about how it felt to share that news? Or was it, did it feel more of like a, you've been through before of, you know, telling people that you were newly single?
It just felt like the thing, the soundbite I had to deliver to everyone that I was catching up with that, you know, because I was busy doing this show and I had been very lucky and done 4 off-Broadway projects last year. And in the busyness of it, I wasn't exactly doing a lot of one-on-one time with friends, or I was only seeing them in these environments. And when the small talk is very short and very public, there's only so much you can do to evade truth, and I'm not one to do that. So it was a lot of, hi, thank you for seeing the show. I'm not good at receiving compliments. Oh, you're going to ask about this. Let me give you the shorthand response at least. And then, you know, if you want the longer story, we can talk another time.
It's almost like coming out again.
Yes. Yeah. And so maybe that's why people do their Instagram notes at post to announce it, because that does save you some trouble perhaps of getting the news out there.
Oh man, it is a weird world we live in when it comes to like people, regardless of you being a performer, a creator, a writer or not, people's social media is kind of like their own press, their own you know, projection. And I think
Which comes around to you saying all these couples posting their best selves, their happy and joyous and successful selves, and not maybe the harder things, the more unvarnished things. And
oh my God, yes.
If that mirrors parents who put up that facade of we are the happy-go-lucky, perfect family, whereas maybe talking about it would have then helped process things or create empathy, or
Hello.
At least been more honest and been a safer environment to grow up in.
Absolutely. And I have to tell you something I've never said on this podcast before, but it totally applies to this. Social media, Matt and I, the first few years of us dating, we would have these moments, and I can say this now because we've definitely worked through them, but if we had a disagreement, we started to do something fully fucked up, and I admit that it's fucked up, but we would, I would, if we had a debate and I thought it was lighthearted enough, I would go to my Instagram and put a poll up to see who people would side with. Fucked up, right? That's fucked up.
And how did those end up? One or the other would feel validated.
Oh, of course. Exactly. One of us would always be like, And then it became like, you know, we would both do it. And then at one point, I fully admit, like, I would leave. You know those mirrors when you're in a bathroom, the vanity mirror that sometimes there, either you can swing the door open, or we had one where you would slide it. You would, there was like a, or whatever it was, I would leave the mirror open a lot. I would.
That was your passive aggressive thing?
No. I literally was just like, I think undiagnosed ADHD. I would just like, yep, got my thing. And I would leave it open. I would just genuinely forget. And so Matt would get frustrated with me, and he would start to post it online and post that Eric did it again, or he would send me a picture of it via text, and I would be like, is so passive aggressive. I'm so, and of course I ended up learning, I ended up just moving out of the apartment, and then that kind of that fixed it. But I bring this up because like there are not many examples of healthy relationships plus social media plus just I think healthy relationships in general. And so I think it's like you really have to what's the word? You have to just like experiment and test like the most productive ways to deal with your own feelings individually and in a relationship. And so all this to say, it's social media is always difficult, I think, no matter who you are.
Right. And it is a new frontier for us, right?
Yeah.
We didn't have this growing up. And I think about parents who decide to post pictures of their babies online versus parents who absolutely do not. And I know some who even blur out their babies. And you think, I wouldn't have wanted my childhood photos out there that could then be discovered by a job employer, or, you know, by your friends in high school or college or even in your adulthood. And some of these kids now will have had that entirely documented without their consent. And what does that mean? And how this is all very, it's all new for us.
That is a definite fraught topic, because I know many, I have many friends with kids who are on opposite sides, who mm-hmm. post everything, who don't post anything. And it's mm-hmm. that is a very interesting point, because it's like, we're not going to find out for another 10 to 20 years.
Right, what, the repercussions of it.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes look at people's TikToks or, and I'm just like, if I was a kid right now, do you see that story about that kid that was like, yes, Gaga, yes. And now he's fully like been completely
memified.
Well, he was memified, and then now he's like older and completely like anti-gay, and now like in the church.
Oh no
sad ending. Fuck. Sad ending. Yeah. But I think like that's a very like worst case, just like outlier bad story. But like,
yeah,
if I was, can you imagine like being a 14-year-old closet case and having mm-hmm. access to TikTok? What the fuck would I be like? I'd probably be posting about Clay Aiken. I don't think I'd be proud. And so I do think it's, we're in a way lucky we weren't kids then, but in another way, maybe we'd both be in Spring Awakening. Well, listen, a lot of gorgeous discussions, but we have not yet discussed the next podcast question, which is Daniel okay. K. Isaac. If the world mm-hmm. was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
I really thought about this, and it was very hard to narrow it down, but I did have the pleasure of working with Linda Lavin in this play last year, and I don't know if any of your guests have brought up Linda Lavin, and so that is my answer.
Daniel, I'm not joking. Mm-hmm. I have on my list of notes how I went through Linda Lavin. So I saw that you did a play with her, and I went through her. I was like, I love Linda Lavin, but why do I love her? And I went through all of her credits, and I she was in Damn Yankees. She has been mm-hmm. in so many. How was it working with Linda Lavin is my first question.
Incredible. Incredible. It was her 80th birthday on, I think, our second preview. And you just Stop. Think, this woman is, she was literally doing downward dog on stage every show. She memorized everything, word perfect, doing incredible, incredible work, and was just the most gorgeous scene partner I've ever had the privilege of working with. Mm. And she's still going. She still has more stories to tell. And so I'm saving an 80-year-old to ensure that she continues working.
And that, hopefully for the next 20 years. I want her to be 100. And I want her to be, 25. I want her to be 105. And she'll mm-hmm. be in the revival of Putnam County Spelling Bee with you. You will have done some vocal training that you can hit yes. Leaf Coney Bear.
Uh-huh.
And but I mean, God, what a stunning answer. And I'm looking at her credits now, and she's, let alone the stage show she's done, I mean, she's a Tony winner. She was in mm-hmm. a Family Affair back in 1962. She did the Damn Yankees movie in 1967. She's then done just so many.
YouTube her Gypsy, that there's this bootleg,
I read that
of
too.
Her Gypsy.
She replaced Tyne Daly as yeah. Mama Rose. Okay, uh-huh. I need to YouTube that.
There's incredible footage out there. Just go down a YouTube rabbit hole.
But Daniel, can we take a moment to really appreciate how amazing your career has been, to say that you have worked with Queen Les Jodie Foster, to watch Linda Lavin do a downward dog, to celebrate her 80th birthday, to be in love with, I mean, like, you have, it's just such what a gay gift. I feel like the religious trauma of it all somehow gifted you with a smorgasbord of queens.
I just want to hear you say trauma and this smorgasbord.
Yeah, I think I might have missaid about half of the words in that sentence, but like, God, it's so, I feel like just by knowing you, I can feel some of that fortunateness. Like, I can feel some of that. Like, you must, what happened when you found out that you booked this play? this solo show, like, was it mostly excitement or was, because I know it's pretty, and for all transparency's sake, I'm seeing the show with a big gaggle of gays in October. So it is set and I'll
I'm
be
very
there.
Excited for y'all to come.
Cannot wait. But like, what did it feel to, you know, you've done so many plays last year, you get this one. Did the solo show of it all freak you out or what was it like?
Oh yeah. I shit my pants. I really thought this is terrifying. I can't do this. And I was so scared of it. And I knew that that meant I had to lean into the fear of it all and at least try. And so I feel like doing this podcast with you is a nice moment of reflection and gratitude to sort of look back on the short career I've had thus far with hopes of a much longer one ahead, and that this gets to be this huge milestone and life chapter that, you know, I've never done a solo show. I've never been offered something like this outright before. And that's thanks to Colm Summers, the director who had seen me in a couple plays last year and had the intuition to think, oh, he can do this solo thing, even though he's never done one before.
Yeah. And I mean, it gives me chills because it's like you step up so much to the challenge and to be, you know, given this opportunity. I think, is there something that if you're sitting right now looking back at the fear you felt, what would you say is something that you learned about the shitting your pants feeling versus now having, you know, just on another 5-show weekend? Like what is the difference of how you feel now being in the middle of it versus looking down the barrel at the fear?
There's something that I'm still working on now, but I think is probably a life lesson to take with me, is that I'm such a perfectionist and a control freak and probably from having not had control growing up or not being able to deliver on other people's expectations growing up and also the industry we're in and how volatile it is and how much uncertainty there is in wanting to control what little you can. And this play forces me to confront the fact that you cannot have control. You cannot take things personally. And I'm a very big softie and take everything personally. And so those two very daunting things were facing me when I knew I would take this on or consider taking it on. And now I hope or wonder that maybe I will have better tools with how to deal with being out of control or embracing the uncertainty more or leaning into the unknown and that that's okay and that I can land on my feet after that, even though I thought I couldn't.
That's, I think, what the fear is. And I think that you really beautifully say how, because I myself am also a perfectionist, I myself have a thing about control. And I think that a lot of it is that we had no control over how we were perceived, about how we would be, if we would be accepted, you know, coming out, all of those things. And I think that something I'm dealing with right now too is my anxiety being a direct correlation to my need for control, because it's like, if I don't know what the outcome is, then my brain starts to spin because I want the control of knowing the outcome. So I think the one of the mantras I've been trying to repeat to myself is like, you don't need the answers, you don't need to know it. It's actually, you like landing on your feet for a lot of us is an actual survival thing. It's like, well, our body feels like we're actually gonna like not be alive, like we're fully like we're not going to survive whatever the thing is. And it could be, you know, a low stakes thing when you think about it, but it feels so monumental. And I think that that's, you know, it's a scary but exciting lesson to be able to go through this play and like see what happens when you attempt to let go of the control and the perfection. And since we have the time, I want to go into, what was it like when you, did you end up coming out while you were still living in California, or was it when you had kind of gotten out of the home, as it were?
The longer version of the story includes me putting myself through conversion therapy while I was in high school because of this intense church and home environment that was seeped in religion and a conservative interpretation of what Jesus or Christianity would feel about homosexuality. And So I came out once to my mom to say I was in conversion therapy because I'd put myself in it before I'd come out to her. Mm. And in conversion therapy, they would say, you're not coming out. You are confessing your sin. So I quote, like big quotes, confessed my sin, which I feel all different ways about now with that kind of framing.
Yeah.
And then I went to college at 16 and swiftly... That was when Facebook was first starting out, and not a lot of people were out about their sexuality and saying they were a man interested in a man, but I did find some very quickly. And to know that there were these out and open gay people, especially in the theater world, mm-hmm. which I'd encountered a little in high school, but more so in college, and then working at La Jolla Playhouse with professionals coming from New York City and who were living their best lives as out individuals. I came out again in my freshman year of college and my mom disowned me, but I was in college. So at least I wasn't homeless until the summers where I just couch hopped to survive. And I at least had the dorms for as long as school was in session. And now we're just in this weird Cold War area of I've never been dependent on her for anything since. And so now she's a little more dependent on me, if anything. And so she gets to make her jabs and I just have to go to therapy or, you know, try to water off a duck's back.
Well, that's truly all you can do. But God, it's a testament to your ability to only depend on yourself, which of course is a double-edged sword, because in one sense, you don't want to have been put in the position to only have yourself. But on the other side, it shows how much of a survivor you are. And I really, you know, of course, it's so painful to hear that, but also I think it's inspiring to put yourself in a place where you're like, I'm the sinner, I'm the problem, I'm going to put myself in conversion therapy. And then when you really zoom out, go to your freshman year of college and you see these people who are clearly living by an example that conversion therapy route is not the way to be. Mm-hmm. And then to be able to embrace yourself while dealing with the pain of family, like, damn, that is some heavy, heavy shit.
It took a lot of therapy.
Yeah.
A lot of failed relationships there.
Sure. I've said, because of my fucked up stuff and coming out stuff, which one day I probably will be able to, like, you know, feel like ready to say everything, because it is, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff personally, all of it. But I have said that I'm going to be in therapy for the rest of my life. Do you feel like you are in a place where you still crave that therapy, or is it like you sometimes need a break from looking within?
I do it weekly, just once a week. And I mean, for me, 2 months ago to regress and be so furious about home-cooked meals just shows you there's still plenty of stuff to work on. So I'm grateful that I have the structure of it, and that, you know, I have a therapist who says I can call or text if I'm really going through something, and I've been with him for many years now. And so I don't know that there is a time where you are quote unquote done or graduated from therapy, and that some ways I hope I have worked through at least the really difficult things that aren't always easy to discuss, or that you know, I'm grateful for the professional support and not just the friends who I have much empathy with, and also don't want to burden them with all of my shit.
I get
and,
it. It's...
And so there's a balancing act of having the community there and the professional help there.
Oh, you are preaching to the choir. And I think for a moment we need to give a quick snaps for therapists. We love you, therapists. I'm not going to say I'd be lost without you. But I would not be good. So listen, what is devastating but true is that this has been already an unbelievable episode, and yet we have to get towards the end where make sure I haven't left any pressing matters. Final question before the final podcast question. Last year, you were doing what looked like an amazing play called You Will Get Sick, and you periodically, a couple of times, posted some really delicious thirst traps to promote the show, but not as many thirst traps this year. Daniel, what changed?
I'm probably more insecure about doing a one-man show and posting my underwear pics when the play deals with depression and suicide. Or maybe because I'm in LA and everyone just has a ridiculous body here and I feel scrawny next to that. I don't know. I also have a boyfriend who works in social media and marketing, and I can just feel him cringing through the internet when I do certain things online. And he tells me so.
I mean,
no, you've inspired me. I'll get my shit together and post a thirst trap from my dressing room. It's tradition.
Judy's, we did it. Mission accomplished. Get Daniel.
I want
K.
the
Isaac.
Show to extend. So if this will sell more tickets, I'll do it.
And I will gladly send the armies to the thirst trap. I will. What's the word they say when you like have a social justice issue that you want to? I'm gonna illuminate it. I'm gonna. It'll come to
amplify?
Me.
Amplify?
Thank you. I'm going to amplify your first and I will make sure.
All for the sake of extension. Yeah.
For the sake of extension and, of course, the horny gay boys of the internet. Yes. Well, you didn't ask for my opinion, but I will tell you that you are an LA 10 as much as anyone else. And that is on period, as they say. Daniel, the final podcast question before we say goodbye is, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Sister Act.
Thank you. That is correct. Yeah. I knew when I met you that we would really align politically in this way, and I thank you for your service. Daniel, tell us, where should people follow you, and how long is Every Brilliant Thing running?
I'm at Daniel K. Isaac, Isaac, which is commonly misspelled, on Instagram. On Twitter, I'm more lurking and not really posting. I have a Threads and a TikTok, but I don't post anything there either, so I guess that makes me a solid millennial on Instagram, or danielkisaac.com. I almost said Daniel like I was a drag queen on Drag Race.
Welcome to the stage, Daniel. Yes. Daniel. I kind of love that, though. I think you just sort of tapped into your next project.
my next drag persona.
Yeah. And when is the show running till?
Currently, it runs till October 15th, and it says a lot of shows are sold out, but a lot of subscribers just move their dates, or maybe rich people don't mind losing money on tickets, and my type A self could never handle that. So there's always tickets available at the door. They have a great rush policy, a student policy. There are interpreted performances coming up. There are talkbacks on Wednesdays. And I really hope y'all can make it.
Yes, you all fucking will. And we're going to get that thirst trap amplified. And Daniel, this has been a pleasure. And I will see you at the theater.
Great. Thank you for having me, Eric.
Thanks so much for listening to That's a Gay Ass Motherfucking Podcast. If you enjoy and you want more bonus episodes, we're at patreon.com/gayasspodcast. It's only $5 a month, and you can hear this week's bonus where I talk about getting too zooted at the spa and the hot daddies and I... drama. Really, it's drama. I love you so much. Next week's guest, you're going to be gagged. It's been a while since we had this type of guest. And trust, you're going to be thrilled. See you then.
Life's better with American Family Insurance. Because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do it yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.